If you're married, undoubtedly you want your marriage to be a good marriage. The question is, how do you define what's a good marriage? Chip Ingram says, a lot of times, we get that definition of what good is wrong.
Our intuition in every relationship, we're human, is what can I get? I'm in this as long as you meet my needs. That's a social contract. A holy covenant is, God's counterintuitive design is, I want you to make the other person's needs your goal. Love them, be a giver instead of a getter, become sensitive and a student of them, and make their life work.
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. How can we get from a self-focused, self-centered orientation on marriage to the kind of marriage where we are regarding each other as more important than ourselves? We'll spend time talking about that today with Chip Ingram. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about something pretty important this week, aren't we? We're talking about how to make marriage work. And I'm thinking folks should recognize, well, this is Family Life Today. I guess that's one of the things we talk about regularly. But this is critical not just for our happiness. This is critical, as we've said, for our culture, for our flourishing as people. We've got to figure out how to make marriage work. Our survival depends on it.
Yeah, and I think, as we know, so many people don't think it works. They've given up. They're marrying later. They're not getting married. They've looked at our generation's marriage and says, it doesn't work. Show me that it does. And that's what this book talks about.
And people are desperate for answers. They're looking for hope, and they don't know where to find it.
Well, we brought the answer man in today, and that's Chip Ingram. Welcome back to Family Life Today.
That's an intimidating introduction,
bro. Like the answer man.
The answer man.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, and God does have the answers, and I'm glad to pass on some of them best I can.
Well, the reason I referred to you as the answer man is because Dave Wilson told me that he's stolen most of what you've written on this subject and preached it at his church, right?
And it works, man. I'll tell you.
Amen.
I know good stuff, and Chip's stuff is good.
It's really good.
And I did give him credit. I always did.
Chip is a pastor and an author and a speaker. He heads a ministry called Living on the Edge. For years gave leadership to Walk Through the Bible and has written a book called Marriage That Works, where he's going to help all of us understand what it is that makes a marriage work. And as we've already said, that's something that a lot of people really have questions about. There are a lot of people who are 24 years old today attracted to somebody thinking, I would like to be married, but they have zero confidence that if they were to have the wedding, that they could sustain it because they have not seen it modeled well for them.
Really true. And I think not only not modeled is, you know, you at least get a little bit of training in a job and you know your expectations. If I'm going to, you know, work at Google or Microsoft or eBay or someplace like where I live, boy, I mean, it's really clear. This is your role. This is what we want you to do. Here's your skill set. The profile that they go through to align that person, you go into marriage, it's like...
We don't have job descriptions, do we?
No, we don't. Well, at least we actually do, but we are unaware of them.
We've ignored them. We haven't paid attention to them. You know, your old professor Howard Hendricks used to say in the city of Dallas, if you want to be a garbage collector, you have to go through a three-week course in order to learn how to be a garbage collector. He said, if you want to get married, you just go down to the courthouse, pay $35 and grunt, and they'll give you a license for that. It takes more training and expertise to be a garbage collector than it does to be a husband or a wife. And yet this is what society is founded on. One of the things you say is that we've got to recognize that how marriage works is counterintuitive. The way we think it's going to work, the way we would naturally kind of reflexively approach how we get to oneness in marriage is not the way that it's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, our intuition in every relationship, we're human, is what can I get? I meet my needs, love me, and we're attracted, and usually opposites attract. And so meet my needs, and I'm in this as long as you meet my needs. That's a social contract. God's counterintuitive design is, this is going to sound so crazy. I want you to make the other person's needs your goal. Love them, be a giver instead of a getter, become sensitive and a student of them, and make their life work. And, you know, that sounds good, but number one, it's impossible apart from supernatural help. But that is his design. And I think behind that design is it really is supernatural. There's something so beautiful when you meet a couple that are outdoing one another and really caring for one another. And, you know, we were joking earlier, but I am a selfish person. And even after 40 years, I've changed a lot, but I'm still down deep in my heart. Apart from giving God the opportunity to work through my life, I'm going to be selfish. So that counterintuitive approach is really difficult, but it's what makes it so exciting. It's what, you know, Jesus said, give and it'll be given unto you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, back into your lap. With whatever measure you give, it's given to you in return. And so often people quote that. It's not a financial passage. The context, it's a relational passage. Mm-hmm. And when you give to the other person, God does amazing things. But boy, getting to understand that and do it, now there's the journey.
Well, talk about the, you mentioned it, the covenant sort of versus the contract, because we live in a contract era and it's transactional. Covenant's a whole different deal. Talk about what that means for a marriage.
The Hebrew word for covenant means to cut, and it's the idea actually of blood flowing. And there's a number of covenants, whether it's Noah or Abraham, Moses, or Jesus, the new covenant. And there's a vow, and there's conditions, and there's a sign, and then it's ratified by blood. A covenant is making the most serious guarantee. It's the point, I am going to keep my word, and I would rather die than break my word. I think someone has said it's an irrevocable commitment to an imperfect person. When you go into it like that, your mindset about how you address everything changes, Dave.
Yeah.
And what happens when the person that you're married to, you made the vow, they don't fulfill the covenant? They are not loving you. They are not serving you. They're not even invested in the relationship at all, or your family, your kids, nothing. How does that spouse respond?
With first great pain, usually with anger. Often they feel like, just forget it. It's never going to work. And I will say that one person can change a marriage. And my wife would say, I think she did. You know, we got to a huge impasse. And I think it was our commitment to the Lord. But I think when you're in that situation, one, it's really, really, really hard. And you need some outside support and some encouragement. But then I think it's choosing. We live in a day where so much of what we see and hear, that love is this feeling and my expectations and I feel good. I like the definition of love that is, love is giving another person what they need the most when they deserve it the least at great personal cost. And that's where the rubber meets the road. I often say when Jesus was in the garden, he did not emotionally want to die for me. He didn't feel good about what I needed most.
In fact, he was praying, Father, if it's possible, take this cup from me, right?
Exactly. If there's a plan B that, you know, in our infinite wisdom we didn't think of, let's do it now. And the fact of the matter is that love really is a choice. And I think the choice to endure, to get help, and sometimes it's, honey, this isn't working. We need help. We need to go to counseling. Or if you won't go, I will. Because I'm not going to stay in this situation the way it's currently operating. And those are tough times, and sounds like you all have been through some of those
as well.
We have,
and you and Teresa went through some real difficulties early in your marriage. How did you get out? You put God first, you said that.
Yep.
But practically speaking, what other things did you do?
Well, number one, we went to counseling. Second, in counseling, what we realized was we had tons of baggage. I didn't understand her. We couldn't communicate. I had expectations that were completely idealistic. And we believed lies. I believed if things weren't feeling great, I must have married the wrong person. I believed marriage should be easy if you're really in love. I believed that if you love Jesus, then God will just magic wand it and you're going to have awesome everything. And the opposite of all that was what I was experiencing. And when we went to counseling, I'll never forget our counselor. He was a pastor, and he had us write down the lies on cards. And then at the bottom of the card, 3x5 card, we actually colored it in red, and we made a stop sign. And then we flipped it over, and there was the truth.
What were some of your lies?
One of the lies was that if you really loved one another, that marriage shouldn't be difficult and painful. Hmm. We actually, with the book, we came up with 20 truth cards because I reviewed them for 2 years on the couch with my wife out loud as we went through counseling.
You read them out loud?
Together.
Wow.
Well, we had to.
You were reprogramming the bad data
exactly
that had
right.
been imprinted onto your hard drive. You had to go back in and say, we got a lot of bad code here. We need to write new code.
Exactly.
And I'm guessing you didn't even feel like doing that sometimes.
Oh, no. No, I mean, you know, it was like, it really was a choice because I made a covenant and it's not working. And this guy says, this is the problem. And I had to admit it was true. And trying hard doesn't necessarily change behavior. Like, try hard. You know, it's in the renewing of your mind.
So if you love each other and love Jesus, marriage should be easy. If that's a lie, what's the truth?
The truth is, in marriages that work, couples believe that conflict and challenges with finances, in-laws, sex, children, and communication are normal, and they result in heart makers, not deal breakers. And so you just realize those are the things that when you get them out on the table and you learn some skills and you realize you're different and you talk them through and you forgive and accept one another, okay, yeah, your parents make me nuts, or wow, my expectations of sex were really different than yours. And all those things are, over time, they're heart makers. They're actually the things that create the intimacy. I was with someone 2 weeks ago who said, man, we're arguing about the kids. I just think, you know, we're not compatible. It's a lie. He's ready to get a divorce. Mm. And I'm thinking, dude, I mean, that is like, hey, you know, line them up. That's like year 5 to 7. You know, wait till year 10, you know. But all those things are normal. I mean, that's like saying, oh, I can't believe it hurts when I lift weights. I can't believe that, you know, my fingers hurt when I'm learning to play the guitar. But you have these idealistic things, and you have to reprogram your mind. And I see couples, you have to make time. Mm-hmm. If you don't know how to communicate, we have, you know, 3 little questions that we learned to put them in the book. And 3 times a week, like after dinner, we would sit down, and you ask these 3 questions, and you ask them, and then you can't talk. So you say, what do you wish? And the person just, and it was really hard. You have to, like, put duct tape on your mouth. And, well, I wish you were more sensitive. I wish our son didn't date that girl because I don't like her. I wish we had enough money to pay for all the groceries. I wish we could get away, blah, blah, blah. And then she says, what do you wish? And she can't interrupt. What are you concerned about? And then, you know, you do the same thing. And then the last question is, what are you willing to do? And there's a rule. You don't have to do anything. Hmm. Those 3 questions we did 3 times a week. Started out, took about a half hour, then about 15 minutes. But in that time, you're not talking about the problems, not talking about work, not talking about the kids. Here's what happens. Your mate says, here's all the weights that I'm carrying. And they don't all have to be serious. And here's where you could blow some wind into my sails. And in 15 minutes after dinner, even when the kids are small, hey, just go play. Go play. and then what are you willing to do? I'm willing to take over the homework for all the math and the science because I feel like that's weighing you down. My wife later said, that was one of the most romantic things you've ever done. Mm-hmm. I'm so attracted to you. And I thought to myself, if I would have done that, I would have done the homework, I mean, 2 years ago. You know, my point is, there's some tools you can learn, and you grow.
When our kids were little, Dave would come in the door, and he's exhausted. I'm exhausted. We have 3 kids under 5. And he needed a break. I needed a break. And we would fight about that.
I needed a break more. There's no
There's
question.
There's always that time that you think my life is much harder than yours. And then you get in this competitive mode. But I'll never forget when Dave said, how would it be for you if I just, when I came home, I gave you an hour. Go do what you want. Go work out. Go to the gym. Go just get away. I wanted to fall on my knees and cry. And that made me want to give back. Like, how can I serve you? What can I do for you? Just that gesture. And it wasn't easy because you were exhausted.
It was. I remember figuring that out, just like you said, Chip, and thinking, this is a godly response. This isn't what I want to do. My flesh doesn't want to do it. This is honoring her unto reverence to Christ. And so I did it, not even really caring if it was going to respond and her loving me back. But yeah, it really was a sacrificial act that I'm glad now looking back, it changed our marriage.
And I would go back to your comment about what do you do when your mate isn't responding? Hmm. this is how one person changes a relationship. Mm. You actually see a need. You don't feel like it. You do it. And it's not like, well, you know what? If nothing happens, there's times I chose to do something for Teresa, and I'm sure her, for me, a lot more. This is my act of worship for you, whether anything happens or not. And it was in those kind of things that, wow. I mean, the response was like, I wish I would have known this like 5 years ago, right?
And I love that you said it's an act of worship, because when your spouse doesn't deserve it and you don't want to, you're doing it unto the Lord. Yeah. And he's celebrating. He's watching. He's saying, way to go. That does bring me glory, and I see your obedience. There's something to that that gives you meaning when I'm cleaning the toilets and I'm, you know, it's like, but God sees this. It's something encouraging.
And I think he gives favor. You know, God blesses obedience. I think when he sees you loving in ways with no expectation, and it's hard, and yeah, you don't feel fulfilled, and you do it unto him. And by the way, then the key is perseverance.
Yeah.
My verse, Hebrews 10:36 says, "For you have need of endurance, so that once you have done the will of God, you might receive what was promised." And the word is hupomeno. It's to be under pressure and stress. It's how God changes us. But I think there's a lot of people that want, hey, you know, man, I've been kind to him for 3 days in a row, and, you know, he's still a jerk,
yes.
Or vice versa. And the quick fix, it really isn't. It really is a journey.
And I do think you're so right about the power of God.
Yeah.
It really comes out of that Ephesians 5:18 passage. But in some ways in my life, it's like I almost want to wait for the power of God, then I'm going to act and serve my wife. And it's like, no, when I decide to serve my wife, I find out the power of God is there to give me the perseverance that I can't muster up. I don't know it until I step out in faith, and then he meets you. And that's
so
obviously true what you're saying,
right? It's
like
stepping in the water.
Yeah.
Water doesn't move until you put your foot in the water, and that's a good word.
I had a woman come up to me to have Dave and I sign a book that we had written, and she pulled me over to the side and she whispered in my ear, hey, I want you to know I finally get it. And I said, what do you mean? She said, I've been married 35 years, and probably the last 32 years, all I've done was gripe and complain in my head about my husband. Mm. He's not a believer. He doesn't notice me. He doesn't come to church. He doesn't do anything. He really doesn't help with the kids. But the more I've grown in my walk with God, I'm seeing him different.
Mm.
And I'm seeing how God made him, and God put some good things into this man. And for the first time in my life, I've been telling him, look at you. Look at how you're such a hard worker. You're so faithful. And she said, and I'm finding this joy that I've never had in my marriage. And I thought, wow, that is miraculous.
That really is.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also counterintuitive, which is what we're talking about. Because if we go with our gut on marriage, say, I'm going to go with what seems right to me. Well, the Bible speaks to that. There is a way that seems right to a man, and the end thereof is what?
Death.
Death. So if you go, I'm just going to go with the flow in marriage, instead of that, we've got to do, and this is what we've talked about here today, we've got to not be conformed to the thinking of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind. I'm going to Romans 12 because I know you've lived a lot in Romans 12.
You bet.
That's a big chapter for you and for your ministry. But that idea of being transformed by the renewing of our mind is foundational to everything, isn't it?
And the end of that verse says, so that you can actually test and experience God's will, the good, acceptable, the great will of God. That's what he wants for people. He wants us to have great marriages.
Mm-hmm.
He has a plan, and it is counterintuitive. It's like, hey, try being selfless instead of selfish. How about honoring me instead of idols? And it requires a lot of hard work. But as we've all shared, wow, the reward is beyond your wildest dreams, because marriage is the context in which children thrive. Mm. I mean, if you did nothing for your kids, I mean, if you didn't let them go to school, if you never, I guess you have to feed them. No. But if you didn't do anything for your kids and they saw two people love each other and love God genuinely and richly, all that psychological stuff that, you know, I had to study about self-image and social skills and all the things that really make people successful in life, they really pick up intuitively from folks who love each other.
Mm, that's so true. I just saw this couple the other day. They're debating whether they should do public school, homeschool, private school, and they're so worried. They don't want their kids to ever to play with anyone else. They're so protective. And yet their marriage is so destructive. They're yelling at each other. They're calling each other names. And I don't have the relationship that I could speak into them. But I told Dave, like, they put so much energy into protecting their kids. And the best way to protect their kids is to love each other.
Amen.
And to let their kids see that, that brings such security. Do you think that the generation coming up that's dealing with so much depression, so much anxiety, are our marriages affecting that?
We did some research at Living on the Edge to find out, why are 68 to 70% of our evangelical Bible-believing kids leaving the faith 5 years afterwards? And if you want kids to really walk with God, here's three things. Number one, their parents live out their faith authentically. It's not something they go to church or just believe the Bible or send you a Christian school or, I mean, there is a dynamic living relationship in the home. Number two, the child early on isn't sitting around the table with someone feeding them all the time, but they develop their own personal relationship and walk with God in some way. And number three, instead of being a participant, they actually are serving in the church. They experience God's grace working through them, and maybe they're in junior high helping a three-year-old, or maybe they're in high school helping a junior higher, or they're building a house in the community for, you know, Habitat for Humanity or something. When kids experience God and see it, they can go away to school and they understand there's a lot of other worldviews, but the reality has gripped their life. Mm-hmm. When it's a set of ideas that mom and dad believes that aren't really challenged in my little world, and the first sociology professor starts talking about everything that Christianity is and bad and ugly and wrong, and all your friends are sleeping with each other, pretty soon it's a lot easier to be an agnostic.
Yep.
Well, and I think the point you're making is our marriage matters to more than just us and our happiness. There's a lot more at stake in how we do in marriage. And if you love your kids, then you gotta figure out how to make marriage work. And if you care about the culture and the future, then you gotta make your marriage work. There's so much more at stake here.
And it's so what Chip's been saying all day. It's like, it's not about me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It really isn't. And that's hard to admit that. It's bigger than me. It's a legacy. It's a generation. I mean, it's almost like you got to step back every day and say, I'm not just trying to be happy here. I am literally building something that could last for generations. Mm. It's that powerful to make my marriage work God's way.
Well, and if you want to find out how to make a marriage work, one way to do that is to get a copy of the book Chip has written called Marriage That Works. We've got it in our Family Life Today Resource Center. In fact, I'm just sitting here thinking about how this book parallels and connects with the book that the two of you have written called Vertical Marriage. There's a lot of overlap here, but I think couples would benefit from reading both books together. We've got copies of both Marriage That Works and Vertical Marriage in our Family Life Today Resource Center. You can order either or both books from us online at familylifetoday.com or call 1-800-FL-TODAY to order. Again, the website familylifetoday.com or call to order Marriage That Works by Chip Ingram or Vertical Marriage by Dave and Ann Wilson. Call 1-800-FL-TODAY, 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Now, here in the closing days of the month of May, we're asking Family Life Today listeners to consider making either a one-time gift or becoming a monthly legacy partner. We have a matching gift that is in place at the moment, and we're trying to take full advantage of all the funds that are available to us, $645,000 in that matching gift fund. So we're asking you to either make a one-time gift or become a monthly legacy partner. If you do become a monthly legacy partner, your donation is going to be matched dollar for dollar for the next 12 months every time you make a donation. In addition, we're going to send you a gift card so that you or someone you know can attend a Weekend to Remember Marriage getaway. And the president of Family Life, David Robbins, is here with us today. And David, it's interesting to see who some of our legacy partners are.
Yeah, we like covering things that relate to every home out there.
Yeah, every family, every relationship within an extended family. You're right.
Absolutely. And so one of our legacy partners said this, "Family life has been a tremendous blessing to me. Even though I've been single all my life, I've been blessed and I have passed on a lot of information to family and friends. And I'm still waiting and continue to be blessed by family life today."
And when you hear passed on information, that's what gets you excited, isn't it?
It does. I mean, I really do believe, Bob, that families are one of the most untapped resources on the planet to help fulfill the Great Commission and cause societal change. And I love it when people are growing from isolation closer to God, closer to their family, but it doesn't just stop there. It actually leads toward impacting others. Nothing gets me more excited than seeing someone pass on the way they have been transformed and helping the transformation of someone else.
Well, we want to ask you to be a part of what God is doing through the Ministry of Family Life. Either make a one-time donation or become a monthly legacy partner and help us take advantage of this matching gift opportunity. You can go to familylifetoday.com and donate online or sign up as a legacy partner online or call 1-800-FL-TODAY to make your donation. But again, please pray that we would take full advantage of this matching gift, and whatever you can do to help make that happen, we would be grateful. And we hope you can join us back again tomorrow. Chip Ingram will be here again, and we'll continue our conversation about marriages that work, talking tomorrow about a husband's responsibility to nourish and cherish his wife and a wife's responsibility to affirm and support her husband. That's right out of Ephesians 5. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Hope you can be with us for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.